Good morning. I want to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals. We're glad you're here with us today. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Dana Womack, and to my left is Justice Mike Wallach, and I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth. I understand the attorneys for the first case have checked in, and I'll ask the clerk to please call the case. You may begin.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Drew York. I represent Appellant E2 Optics in this case. I'll be arguing on behalf of all of the appellants, including Mr. Paul Nguyen and also Southwest Networks. According to ABLE, this lawsuit involves an important matter of public concern, and that is public participation public contract bid process and the sanctity of that bid process. In late 2017 and early 2018, DFW Airport Board awarded several contracts to E2 Optics over a number of bidders, including the Appley ABLE Communications. Upset over losing that public bid process, ABLE turned around and filed this lawsuit first against Mr. Nguyen and then adding Southwest and E2 for various claims, arguing that but for our participation in and competition in that public bid process, those contracts would have been awarded to ABLE. And importantly, the claims in this case, all of which allege the use and disclosure of confidential proprietary information, trade secrets, solicitation of employees, all ignore the fact that prior to any communications between Mr. Nguyen, E2 and Southwest, the airport board awarded one contract to E2 because E2 was the lowest bidder on that contract. ABLE's lawsuit is a pretext that is designed to chill public participation and competition in future government bid processes. That is a matter of public concern. The TCPA addresses this pernicious effect of the harm intended by baseless litigation that suppresses public participation in government processes. That's exactly what we have today. The impact of this court's decision cannot be understated. If you allow those who lose in the bid process to turn around and file baseless lawsuits, it will chill public participation and competition in future public bid processes. At a minimum, it stains the winner when it seeks to apply for the next subsequent bid as the incumbent. That is in itself a matter of public concern. Now, as the court's aware, the TCPA applies a burden-shifting mechanism. We start first with the question of whether the TCPA applies to the claims in this case. As alleged in our motion below and in our briefs filed here, we asserted that both our exercise of free speech and the right of association were implicated by the claims asserted by ABLE in this lawsuit. So we start with a plain textual analysis of the statute, as the Supreme Court has made clear in Adams, Coleman, and Lippincott. First, are the claims made by ABLE based on, related to, or in response to a communication made in connection with a matter of public concern, such as economic community well-being, the government, or a good product or service in the market? We submit that all three elements exist here. First, we have a communication, that is, allegations in this case that Mr. Nguyen, as well as E2 and Southwest, discussed among themselves. Mr. Nguyen provided confidential proprietary information to E2 and Southwest to use as part of the bid process, as part of completing the contracts, and also as part of soliciting ABLE's employees. That constitutes a communication under the statute. Secondly, all of the claims that have been asserted by ABLE in this case are based on, relate to, or otherwise in response to those communications. And third, the communications were made in connection with a matter of public concern. We have several here. One, we have the government. The DFW Airport Board constitutes a government. Secondly, it relates to the economic and community well-being, participation in a public bid process, and performance of the contracts at issue that were awarded by the government. And third, it involves good service or market in the good service or product of the marketplace. Either Able's own products and services that it was providing to the airport previously, also it would be as to E2's goods and services and products provided here. And importantly, we need to focus on the fact that the Texas Supreme Court has made clear that there only needs to be a tangential relationship between the communications and the matter of public concern. We do not have to have that the statements were made publicly. We also do not have to show anything more than the tangential relationship. That is, it's peripheral, it's touch and level. Here, we actually have more than that. We have communications that were made in the course of, as alleged, the participation and submission of a bid to the government. That relates to a matter of public concern. Both the government itself, as well as economic and community well-being, because effectively, at the end of the day, the public is paying for the costs of the contracts awarded under the bid process. Now, Able's second amended petition, its response in this court asserts that this does not fall under the TCPA because, as it stated, you cannot invoke the TCPA based upon allegations of mere tortious conduct. Respectfully, I disagree. If that were the case, then any plaintiff who were before you, or any defendant who was before you on a defamation claim and argued that the TCPA applied, which it would, as long as it related to a matter of public concern, the mere fact that the plaintiff alleges that the statements made were defamatory is not enough to avoid the TCPA. And in fact, this court has stated such in at least two cases. In the N. Ray Lipsky case, before it went to the Texas Supreme Court, the court was faced with the question raised by the plaintiff that the statements made were defamatory, and that should play into the analysis at step one of whether the TCPA applied. And the court said, that's not the case. We apply that at step two, whether the plaintiff has shown prima facie evidence of each essential element of his claims. This court then also reiterated that fact in the Rauhauser case in 2017, in which the plaintiff alleged that the defendant had made terroristic threats and asked the court that it should consider that as part of the step one analysis of whether the TCPA applied. And this court, again, citing Lipsky, rejected that analysis and said, no, we only apply that at step two. It's merely a plain textual analysis. Was there a communication based on a related to the communication, and was the communication made in connection with a matter of public concern? And this court is not the only one who has rejected the argument that Able has made in this case. The court in Schimmel out of the Houston Court of Appeals made the same argument with respect to claims of fraud and also of misappropriation of customers. And then also in the Elite Auto Body case, that argument was rejected there as well out of the Austin Court of Appeals last year. So, based upon the allegations that were made in Able's live pleading, they have alleged communications in which information was disclosed in connection with public bids. That is a matter of public concern that TCPA applies. Able, alternatively, has argued that the commercial speech exemption applies. And respectfully, that's not the case either. First, it's important to remember that we apply a narrow application of the exemption and we look at it on a statement-by-statement basis. Critically here, Able was unable to show the third or fourth elements of the exemption, the third element being that the statements and communications were made in connection with a commercial transaction. And the fourth prong being that the statements, communications were made to an actual or potential customer of the goods or services that were being offered by the defendants in this case. The allegations made by Able in its live pleading as well as in its response or that the defendants communicated among themselves, not that they communicated with any actual or potential customer. That alone is insufficient. Several courts of appeals have found that, including most recently the Dallas Court of Appeals on August 22nd in Goldberg versus EMR USA Holdings Inc., 2019 Westlaw 3955771 at page 8. Additionally, that same day, the Eastman Court of Appeals in ETC Texas Pipeline Limited versus Addison Exploration and Development LLC rendered the same opinion on page 7, 2019 Westlaw 3956114. Additionally, Goldberg found that communications with suppliers, vendors, and other third parties did not constitute the fourth prong required under the commercial speech exemption. And critically here, because Able has alleged that there were communications between E2 Southwest and Mr. Wynn, with Able's employees allegedly attempting to solicit them to come work for E2, those communications also do not fall under the commercial speech exemption. Goldberg found the same thing. So, because Able did not show in its response, in fact, it pointed to no evidence in its response about how any of the communications arose out of a commercial transaction or were made to any actual or potential customers in this case, the commercial speech exemption does not apply. Which then leads us to the third step, which is whether Able made its prima facie showing. And respectfully, it did not. We'll start with the fact that Able was so concerned that Mr. Wynn was breaching his non-competition, non-solicitation, and confidential information provisions in his employment agreement that they never sought any temporary injunctive relief of any kind against E2, Southwest, or Mr. Wynn since they filed this lawsuit in the spring of 2018. In order to show prima facie proof, Able must show clear and specific evidence, which must be based on demonstrable facts and a reasoned basis. Conclusory statements and assertions without a demonstrable facts and a reasoned basis are insufficient as a matter of law to show prima facie evidence. The pleadings by Able in this case contain conclusory allegations with zero facts outlining any of the claims or any of the allegations, and they are insufficient. Furthermore, the response filed by Able in this case attached an affidavit from Mr. Lopez from Able, which also contained bare and baseless opinions. For example, Mr. Lopez stated not that Mr. Wynn had actually shared and used any of Able's confidential information, but that, quote, it is inevitable that Wynn will share and use Able's confidential and proprietary information with E2 and Southwest. And then additionally, again, not that Mr. Wynn actually provided any confidential proprietary information or trade secrets, but that, quote, Mr. Wynn has apparently provided confidential information to his new employer. And as the Supreme Court stated in Lipsky, these sorts of bare, baseless opinions are not a sufficient substitute for the clear and specific evidence required to establish a prima facie case under the TCPA. As I mentioned in my opening, Able applied for and lost an audiovisual contract with DFW Airport. The parties submitted their bids for that contract in September of 2017. The contract was awarded in early November of 2017 before Mr. Wynn actually reached out to E2 seeking a job as a project manager for the audiovisual contract, not for the contracts that they complain of here today. Soliciting customers, the only evidence that Mr. Wynn, or that Able submitted, was that after Mr. Wynn left his employment, he met with TCU. After the school contacted both Able and E2, seeking them to bid on work at the schools. And in the case of soliciting employees, we cited an example in our brief of Mr. Jimenez, who worked for Able, who reached out to Mr. Wynn seeking not a raise but to get a job at E2. And Mr. Wynn responded in a text message saying, let me help you try to get a raise at Able, not seeking to get him a job. In another instance, Mr. Lopez cited to Norman Norwood, who had left and claimed that Mr. Wynn assisted and solicited, but if you look at the email that was attached, Mr. Massey, who was another ABLE employee who came to E2, stated, quote, he had that I had my cousin Norman Norwood sending you his resume. In sum, there is zero evidence other than the conclusory allegations that supports any prima facie proof of ABLE's claims that they have filed against the appellants. And we ask this court to reverse and remand, finding that TCPA applies, and that the claim should be dismissed because of the lack of proof. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. It's good to be back. I haven't been here in this court in quite a while. New faces on the bench, and the opportunity is greatly appreciated. Your Honors, just to quickly address some of the things that were presented by Mr. York initially. A simple review of the pleadings in this case, the briefing in this case, will show that these claims brought by ABLE Communications were not based upon chilling the bid process or anybody's participation in the bid process. That is simply not an accurate rendition of the claims in this case.
Do the claims that are made in the case actually have to arise from that process, or is it they have to just be tangentially related to the process?
The claims in this case certainly surround, in part, an involvement and participation in the bid process, but the damages and the damages that arise from the claims in this case are not limited to the bid process.
Okay, but in terms of making the connection to the TCPA, how closely connected do they have to be in order to invoke the TCPA?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that is a fact-specific endeavor for the court to analyze. And just because there may be some involvement of a bid process at the DFW Airport as a customer or potential customer, as set forth in the allegations, does not necessarily bring the case under the purview of the TCPA.
Well, in terms of the closeness of the connection, how would you rate this compared to the Exxon case?
Your Honor, I'm not entirely familiar with the Exxon case, but I will tell you that the claims in this case arise specifically under a breach of a non-compete, non-solicit, non-disclosure agreement that the legislature has now very specifically addressed and for the purpose of clarifying the statute. And I'm prepared to present the court with some of the most recent interpretations based upon cases of substantial similarity to the claims in this case. Keep in mind, Your Honors, the claims in this case involve an employee that started with ABLE Communications in 2000. He was there for 17 years, became one of their top employees, senior project managers. The DFW Airport contracts, two of them in particular, airblown fiber, traditional fiber contracts, at the time they were nearing the renewal or expiration period at which the bid process was going to arise again, unbeknownst to ABLE, Mr. Wynn started communicating with E2 Optics, a competitor, while he was still employed at ABLE. The communications at issue, Your Honor, are not related to association or speech related to them working at DFW Airport together. They were reviewing our non-compete, reviewing our non-solicit, non-disclosure to determine whether it was an enforceable document, to determine whether they were going to face claims for breach. The claims at issue, Your Honor, seek to stop the parties from, including Mr. Wynn, from breaching the non-compete, non-solicit, confidentiality provisions, the fiduciary duties associated with him before he left. Throughout the end of 2018, these communications ultimately show that Mr. Wynn had already set up an email account with E2 and on the alleged, according to E2 and Southwest allegations, on the first day he started on January 15th, he already had an email set up. He had already interviewed employees that were able for purposes of getting them hired at E2. And again, all of these facts, Your Honor, are set forth in the rather voluminous record, I think, that we put before the trial court in this case in our response, which coincidentally resulted from the fact that we started by making the claim against Mr. Nguyen and conducted non-party discovery and quite a bit of discovery, including with DFW Airport through open records requests, before we ever joined E2 or Southwest into the case. Thankfully, because of the amount of discovery that we could have or would have been limited to conducting during the 60-day window before a motion has to be filed, a motion to dismiss, we had already gone through a full-blown summary judgment proceeding, wherein the enforceability of the non-competed issue was challenged, in which virtually all of the same evidence that we put before the court today was presented to the trial court. And at the hearing at which the judge considered the TCPA motion to dismiss, the same ruling, he denied the motion for summary judgment. Now, back to the applicability here. Again, I think if we look at this case in terms of what it is, this is a case involving breach of the non-compete and all of the associated claims related to tortious conduct arising from a breach of a non-compete, affiliated claims, Uniform Trade Secrets Act, Theft Liability Act. These are the type of breaches of fiduciary duty while Mr. Nguyen was still employed at Aon. I believe that even during the legislature this year and considering the clarifying amendment, all of this was addressed in terms of what kinds of claims was this statute meant to address. I think we have presented all of this in great detail in our brief, so I can't get into all of it, but I did come with that this court can and should consider the subsequent legislative history that has occurred since all of this was briefed. I would refer the court to Jeff Leach's commentary, in which he says that these are the types of claims that should not be made and need to be made, that these changes need to be made to fix unintended consequences. The TCPA having been abused, misapplied, and misinterpreted, again resulting in unintended consequences. Meldon and Hunt, Inc. versus East Rio Hondo is a Texas Supreme Court case in which that court considered Chapter 150 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, and amendments that were made clarifying that statute in the face of a pending motion to dismiss. The court in that case actually used the subsequent legislative history used to clarify what their interpretation should be and how they addressed it.
Are you seriously asking an intermediate appellate court to disregard Supreme Court precedents because the legislature says that the Supreme Court got it wrong?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I am stating that because the legislature has gone back and clarified it, that this court has
But the effective date of that was September 1st. Your cause of action predates September 1st of this year.
Understood, Your Honor.
But isn't the fact that you've actually, that the legislature actually had to go back and clarify it according to what they thought they were doing, supposedly, the previous session, evidence of the fact that the plain language that the Supreme Court's relied upon in cases as being they didn't get what they intended to do? That's an unintended consequence. But it's still a consequence.
It is, Your Honor. However, I do think it has identified the way that the legislature intended for the statute to have been interpreted. That is all I'm telling this court. Now, setting aside the legislative history that I just mentioned, this court in Kochak versus Antero, I believe, has addressed a relatively similar scenario involving breaches, tortious conduct that were not, we contend, Your Honor, ever intended to fall under the purview of the TCPA violation of this case. There are, since the briefing in this case, there have been four additional Dallas Courts of Appeals cases which have doubled down on their view and interpretation of the statute as applied to cases very similar to this. Chenier Energy v. Log V. I would refer the court to the Dyer case that we've already cited. Universal Plant, we've already cited. And since then, Peel Energy versus Gravitas, Natural Polymer, Staff Care Inc., and DeMonte v. Hallmark, all of which address similar circumstances, and I can provide the size to the court if the court would like me to. I brought copies of those cases.
Which of those cases deal, in your opinion, with connections with governmental entities?
Your Honor, I don't know that any of those deal with governmental entities like DFW Airport.
Isn't that a significant factor?
It may be, Your Honor, under some types of claims, but not under the claims in this case. The fact that we're dealing with a governmental entity like DFW Airport, Your Honor, is not dispositive of the issue here. The court needs to look at the nature of the claims and the facts underlying the claims to determine whether we're talking about claims being brought allegedly in an effort to retaliate against somebody that is exercising their constitutional right to free speech and association. And that is simply not what happened here, based upon the record, based upon the pleadings, Your Honor.
Do you see a difference between the phrase public concern and the phrase common interest?
I haven't ever made that distinction, Your Honor.
Okay.
I have not made that distinction, but partially because we're looking at a set of claims that we, Your Honor, believe don't ever get to the type of exercise of a constitutional right that is protected and addressed by the statute.
But the statute itself is not constitutional. It's statutory. It provides statutory definitions for statements and communications. It doesn't rely on the Constitution for that. It may have had its genesis in the idea of free speech, which is a constitutional issue, but the definitions are statutory. They're not constitutional.
I do understand, Your Honor.
So it goes beyond constitutional free speech. It goes to statutory rights of speech.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. And let me clarify my argument here that I believe under both circumstances, whether we're talking about statutory speech defined and addressed by the statute or constitutional, we don't get there. In the case law addressing the specific types of claims that we've got here, as we've cited in our brief that I presented to the court today, I think make that very clear. The Justice Keyes concurring opinion in the Universal Plant case, I think, was sort of a foundation for many courts looking at how the statutes may have been misused or taken into certain scenarios that it should never have been. And we've cited all of that in our case as well. So I would refer the court to our brief in terms of the applicability of the TCPA to these specific claims. We believe it is absolutely clear, Your Honors, that it was never intended and should not apply to the claims in this case. And as I'm running out of time here, I want to make sure to clarify for the court, in terms of the burden clear and specific evidence burden, please note that it was the movement's burden to show by a preponderance of the evidence that the underlying lawsuit was brought as in retaliation for somebody's exercise of speech and association, statutorily or constitutionally, Your Honor. All the plaintiff had to do, and we far exceeded this at the trial court level, Your Honor, was show clear and specific evidence, enough evidence to raise a rational inference that these claims have validity. And I see my time has run out, Your Honor. I don't want to exceed my time. I'm happy to address any additional questions if the court would like.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by addressing some questions, Justice Bullock, that you raised. First, how would I relate this case, how closely would I relate this case to the Exxon Coleman case? And in Exxon, you had claims for defamation based on allegations that one of Exxon's employees had failed to properly, connect and preserve a fuel gauge tank. Those were private communications. The Supreme Court said in that case that the mere fact that those private communications are not dispositive. The issue there is that they were made in connection with a matter of public concern, their health, safety, and the environment, that if the fuel gauge is malfunctioning and blows up, it places the public at risk. And here, we have private communications involving a matter of public concern because they are tied to the submission and performance of government bid contracts. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, the sanctity of the public bid process, every person in society, including the competitors that submitted bids, would want to ensure that the process is clean and done in good faith.
So how does this get beyond the, quote, common interest restrictive approach that this court took in Kochak, I guess is the proper pronunciation?
Sure, and I'm glad you asked that because I was going to address that as well. So there are, I think, two explanations for that. Number one is this court in Kochak only addressed the issue of the right of association, and the phrase common interest is only found in the definition of right of association. It's not found in the definition of the exercise of the right of free speech. And we have alleged that both rights were implicated by the pleadings asserted in this case. So you can find that the TCPA applies under free speech even if you find for whatever reason that common interest does not exist to invoke the right of association. But I would also submit to the court that the right of association is invoked here because there is a common interest in the ability to participate freely and fairly in the public bid process. We have the right to participate. We're not the only ones who have the right and the desire to participate. ABLE has the right and desire to participate. The other entities that submitted bids also had that interest as well. That is a common interest that everyone was pursuing as part of their efforts in submitting bids. So it's our submission to the court that the right of association is also invoked, and we recognize the language that this court found in Kochak based on common interest. But I also agree with you, Justice Waller, based on your question that you asked about, is it important that there's a tie to the governmental entity here? And yes, I believe that's dispositive. The Dallas Courts of Appeals decisions that Mr. Collins read off to the court, none of those involved any actual tie to a governmental entity or a governmental bid process or anything of the sort. And in fact, I'd also state that the most recent case out of the Dallas Supreme Court on the issue, the Goldberg case that came out August 22nd, involving Justices Myers, Brown, and Whitehill, had involved commercial tort claims of misappropriation of trade secrets, just like this, breach of fiduciary duty, just like this. And the court found that the TCPA applied in that case and dismissed a number of the claims in that case as a result. So the Dallas Court of Appeals has not gone the opposite direction. The legislative amendment that was asked about, we think that actually helps us because it clarifies that that's what the law was at the time, and we're required to follow the law that was in place at the time that this case was filed. And finally, Mr. Collins argued that they submitted a voluminous record in this case, and respectfully, they did. But a voluminous record does not equate to prima facie proof. A voluminous record is just what it is, a voluminous record. There must be clear and specific evidence within that record establishing a prima facie showing of each essential element of the claims. The mere fact that they submit hundreds of pages does nothing more than provide volume of material for the court to read. It doesn't actually show the prima facie proof. It's the old Wendy's commercial, where's the beef? The prima facie proof must be in those documents. As we pointed out in our briefing, it's not. In fact, it's contradicted by the own evidence that they submitted to this court and submitted to the trial court below. So in sum, the TCPA applies here. The commercial speech exemption does not apply, and Abel failed to meet its prima facie showing. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll yield the rest of my time. And thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we appreciate your arguments today. You've been very helpful to us. You're now your case has now been submitted, and you're free to leave if you wish. You can stay. We have two more cases to be argued. If you want to listen, you may, or you may go about your business. Thank you very much.